I will call the meeting to order, and let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, let's start with the Chair's report. I have a couple things to mention after you log in. Thank you, Ginny. Ray, have you logged in? Okay. Jay Johnson, have you logged in? Jay Johnson? Paging Jay Johnson? And what do we have? 33 members are present. That is a quorum. I want to start by noting that the cheese and crackers out there are being provided by La Crosse County Dairy Promotions in recognition of June as Dairy Month. And they have a number of Dairy Facts 2010 that they would like me to pass along to the board. Number one, La Crosse County has approximately 112 dairy herds with more than 9,300 cows. These cows produce an average of 17,000 pounds of milk per year per cow, totaling more than 158 million pounds of milk. Second, each dairy cow generates more than $2,000 of direct income to producers, and in turn, each dairy cow also produces $15,000 to $17,000 of economic activity locally. Number three, it is estimated that agriculture provides more than 3,500 jobs in La Crosse County alone, with one-third of these jobs still coming from milk production and dairy processing. Fourth interesting fact is that La Crosse County milk producers and the dairy industry contribute more than $200 million to the county's economy. Total ag contribution for the county is approximately $440 million. Number five, Wisconsin's top commodity sold by dollar value is still milk at more than $4.5 billion annually, and La Crosse County's top agricultural commodity is milk as well. And finally, nationally, one farmer produces food for 155 people. So we want to thank the dairy producers here for providing us with the cheese and crackers tonight. And it looked like people have already partaken of that. If you have not, we're not going to have a recess, but take a walk next door and help yourself. Next thing I want to do is mention that is Jerry here? Okay. This is the last meeting for Jerry Huber. As I think everyone knows, he is moving to New York. Steve's going to call on him during Steve's administrator's report, but I wanted to also personally say that we're going to really miss Jerry. He's been just a great, great department head and a deputy administrator, and we certainly all wish him well. So you'll hear a little bit more about Jerry and from Jerry in a few minutes. Next, I want to call on Arlene with regard to update on the County Board picnic.
Thank you, Steve. Briefly, everything is progressing smoothly. Once again, we are clipping coupons and trying to buy every item on sale. Last month, we asked for entree suggestions. We didn't get any feedback, so we will do the best we can to keep your cost at a minimum. At our July County Board meeting, we will give you a full report with menu, price, and any updates for our August meeting and picnic at Swalholt Park in West Salem. That concludes Jerry and my update. Thank you.
We're also going to want to know a count as we get closer to that date, and so we'll start to have tickets available. But remember, first of all, to mark that on your calendars for August. County Board meets during the morning, not in the evening. So,
and they can pay me anytime.
And you can pay Arlene anytime. She's always happy to take your money.
Thank you.
What's the price? Do we have that set?
Pardon?
Do we have the price set?
No.
Okay.
We will have it next month. We have three bids out, and we're waiting for all three of them to come in.
You can give Arlene lots of money, and she'll return any extra.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
All right. WCA convention registration, I'm going to have this on every month as we go along here for a while. If you are interested in going to a WCA convention in September, we would like you to get signed up as soon as possible. Just talk to Margaret in the chair's office. She can take care of that for you. We always have a really good turnout on that. If we're after a particular deadline, which is about midsummer, it costs more money, so we'd like you to think ahead. If you want to go, let's get you registered. Next thing is County E-News. As you know, we've been doing that. It's with things a little slower in the summer. We were doing that about once a month. I think we have about 200 people right now that receive that every time that we send it out. What we're looking for is contributions from any supervisors who are interested in writing an article that could be part of the County E-News, maybe on a conference you've been to or an issue that you're dealing with in your committee or whatever. Very interested. Anybody is available to do that. We've tried to not make it a sell job where we're advocating a particular position, say this before the board, but certainly it can be something that advocates county interests. So if you're interested, willing to do that, just talk to me or talk to Steve O'Malley. County board picture, Roger, what's the situation there? Roger's the one who always does that for us.
Whatever.
Okay.
Can I?
He's so accommodating.
Because he sits next to me.
Yeah, it's because he sits next to Arlene. All right. Would Raj, would the next planning meeting be a good time to do it, or that would work for you, though? Okay. How many people are likely to not be at the next planning meeting? Actually, we don't always have a really great turnout for those. Should we wait till fall, till September? Then people are done with vacations? What's that? A picnic picture? Then people are going to think we're having fun. We don't want anybody to think that we're having fun. Let's look at, certainly we can have pictures, though, at the County Board picnic. I think that's a good idea. But let's look at maybe September. People should be back by then and have a good turnout. So we'll keep you posted in that regard. Supervisor conference reports, last thing on my agenda. Anybody have any? Bill Brockmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a conference report per se, but I just thought I'd stick it in now. The Legislative Committee met for the first time this two-year session on June 7th, and one of the things we had decided was that I should announce, that we, in addition to taking issues or recommendations from standing committees, we also would be happy to hear and be interested in hearing suggestions from members at large of the board. So please, if you have those, get them to myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Jeff Schrader, did I see your hand up back in the corner there?
Yes, sir. I just recently attended the WCHA summer conference in Wisconsin Dells, and we had a joint meeting of WCA Transportation and WCHA. And most of it has to do with dollars, of course, but we talked about the maintenance, rural road maintenance and the state highway maintenance, possible legislative efforts regarding the increase of truck weights. Evidently, there's going to be some emergency funds available, supposedly through the state, for roads that get beat up by overweight trucks. And then they talked about the legislative priorities for the next legislative session. And then also there will be a resolution coming before you probably next month, and that's going to do with transfer of money out of the transportation fund. Also, I want to remind everybody that this weekend is a big weekend for French Island. We're going to have French Island Days, Island Days, Freedom Fest, and Freedom Flight. Our fourth Freedom Flight is going out this weekend. So please come over and join us over there. Thanks.
Thank you for the report, and thank you for that reminder. Bev Mock.
I just wanted to report that I went to a couple of things on the Day in a Life event that was June 8th, and I went to observe municipal court. They were dealing with children and several of the families, and some of those things are kind of sad to observe, but good for me to understand what's going on. Then I also went down to Mormon Cooley's new care center and got a great tour The people working there seem to be really enthused about what they're doing, and the first day they opened up, they were very busy. So I think that's going well. And the remodeled, what I guess was a church, they seem to be happy with the way it's put together. So I think that's going to be a good asset.
Good. Thanks, Bev. Anybody else? Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of points. First of all, maybe it's too early to talk about the fair. The fair is coming up the middle of next month in July. So I'll have that on your agenda. I'll talk about that next month.
Don, do you have the exact dates yet?
The 14th to the 18th, I think.
14th
to the
18th.
There's a flyer in the entranceway of the courthouse as you come in the side door.
Okay, thank you.
Secondly, the RCND just received a grant for $265,000 for looking at Emerald Ash Borer, and believe it or not, it's coming closer to us all the time. We went down with five people the other day to a spot along the river below, between Genoa and Victory, along the river in the marshy land, and we're going to be doing some harvesting, but the ash borer is within 15 miles of Goose Island Park now, and with the right kind of wind when the moths are out there, it may have a problem here in the near future. You can treat trees individually, but it's pretty costly, but you can't mass produce to treat them and gain anything, so there's no corrective measure yet, but it's coming closer to us all the time.
Thank you, Don. Arlene, did I see your hand?
Yes, you did.
All right.
Thank you. I attended Wisconsin County Summer Highway Conference in the Dells last week for 4 days, along with Jeff. We had a motivated speaker, be yourself, improve yourself on your attitude. It was very good. We also had federal state transportation legislative review, where we are at and what we can expect for Wisconsin. In 2009, Wisconsin ranked the worst 10th in the country. We have more commitments in this state than revenue. It will be a slow recovery as we need to maintain what we have. We also talked about high-speed rail is scheduled for 2013. We toured an ethanol plant facility and the new Juneau County Highway Department. I moderated a session with the DOT on signage stop yield speed signs, which are replaced every 10 years, and I brought that back for Mr. O'Malley, which I gave to. Our entertainment was a one-man band from Florida playing many instruments. He was excellent. This is the end of my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Arlene. Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At our June Southwest ITPEC meeting, we gave a $1,000 scholarship to nurses training to the 40 and 8. When you see the American Legion locomotive in parades and trips, be it known that they charge a small fee, all that money goes to support the student nurses. It's nice to know that an organization supports us given the shortage on nurses. And one other thing, I just want to take a minute to say a few things about Arlene and the Wisconsin Counties Highway Association. Arlene and I have been friends for about 30, 35 years, and in that time I've seen her lobby Madison and Washington many times on behalf of La Crosse County. 4 years ago, this body recognized Arlene for her sacrifices and accomplishments for La Crosse County with a plaque. She usually has one or two conference reports every month. She has a very supportive employer that lets her off work to serve La Crosse County. And when she gets off work, she gives up her wages as a representative county at these conferences and events. The list of what she does is way too long to mention at this time for all that she does. She just returned from a week-long conference with the Wisconsin Counties Highway Association. I'm happy to say what she didn't say. And La Crosse County can be very proud of the first woman in its 100-year history to chair that organization. Next year, she will also serve as chair at their 100th year conference. Thank you for all you do, Arlene, and congratulations, Madam Chair.
Well, I think deserves a round of applause. Congratulations, Arlene.
Jerry, I'll give you some of the picnic money. Thank you.
Jill Billings.
I would just like to update the board on the Family Policy Board. The group met today. They're energized by the new evolution of the board. And a pending official appointment, the officers will be, the Family Policy Board will be Grace Jones from Cooley Cap and Mike Desmond as chair, Mike Desmond from the Boys and Girls Club as vice chair. And for the exec committee, it will be Jill Billings, chair, and Grace Jones as vice chair. And so, again, thank you for codifying this group. And I think our next agenda item will be a retreat. Our next action will be a retreat where we will set priorities. And people are very excited about this. I think it's going to be a positive thing for La Crosse County and the Human Services Department. And I'm hoping that Margaret Wood will talk about her newest appointment or election. Sorry.
Thank you, Jill, and I guess that gets us to Margaret.
Thank you. I attended the Wisconsin Association of Local Health Departments and Boards in conjunction with WCHA, and that was in Middleton. And I wasn't going to say too much about it because the main information coming out of that is how health services is not supported very well at the state. In fact, we rank 49th or 50th, and we do have a resolution coming up, so I didn't want to take the steam out of that resolution. But I was elected president-elect of the WALDAB Association for, well, next year president-elect, then the next year after that president. So,
congratulations, Margaret.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a report? Okay. Thanks to everyone who did give a report. That was very interesting. I think that gets to the end of my report, so let's go on to Steve O'Malley.
Good evening. A couple of things I want to touch on in addition to what's listed here, but first I'd like to take a moment just to have all of us acknowledge. Jerry, would you please come up to the podium, because I want to embarrass you in front of our board. We're very disappointed that Jerry is leaving La Crosse County. Many of you were at the Tuesday night event where we roasted and toasted and mostly had wonderful things to say about Jerry. After almost 12 years, the impact that Jerry has had on this county, on this state, and really this nation in human services is really second to none in my career. Jerry's been just a pleasure to work with. We're going to miss him so much. And Steve was right. We really need to take a few moments to recognize you and, again, thank you publicly. The impact you've had on family and children's issues, mental health issues, criminal justice, nursing home and long-term care. I know I'm going to forget something because I'm not speaking from any prepared text, but it's just been a pleasure to work with you, and we're really going to miss you, Jerry, and your wife, Debbie, as well. You've had such a great impact on this community. And I don't know, I just feel like we should have some kind of a round of applause just to thank him.
And isn't it nice that tonight doesn't even have to be a rebuttal?
Just a couple of things I just want to say. No speeches and no metaphors. I want to thank you for the great party on Tuesday. Also for the card, Arlene, you did a great job. Really touched me. Believe it or not, I'm even going to miss board meetings because now I have to go before the New York legislature. And if you've been following New York politics, that's not going to be necessarily that fun. I indicated on Tuesday that New York has a $9 billion deficit. The governor obviously is not running for election. Pretty much we're assured that Andrew Cuomo probably will be the next governor in New York. He's running about 25% ahead. But within the context, I just read an email today that more furloughs are coming, more cuts within the context of social services. So even though you're going to have a tough budget ahead in 2011, 2012, I keep on saying that the only two states that basically have a surplus, you wouldn't have predicted it 5 years ago, Montana and North Dakota. So I think they're putting out major advertisements to go to those states. but all of us are in the same thing together. I can guarantee you that I'm a positive that this county is going to move forward. We have set the DNA here, and a lot of that is a credit of the board. Got a lot of credit on Tuesday, but in reality, the credit goes to my management team, Steve, both of the Steves, and to you. So it's going to be emotional next week. I'll be here next week just spending some time with my management team, but I want to thank you for all you have meant to Debbie and to myself and to the community. Thank you.
And hopefully we're not going down a slippery slope to the bottom, so that's...
You didn't make that up.
No, I didn't make that up. That, I'm always quoting Jerry. So, okay, I've got a proclamation. Proclamation June 2010, Parks and Natural Resources Month, whereas the county park system and our natural resources are an integral part of La Crosse County community, and whereas the quality of our parks and natural resources provides safe and healthy places for residents and visitors to recreate and enjoy, and whereas residents and visitors are encouraged to educate themselves and adopt responsible lifestyles that preserve the beauty and value of our parks and natural resources, and whereas La Crosse County employees from the Facilities Department and the Department of Land Conservation serve to educate, protect, maintain, and enhance the quality of our parks and natural resources, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of June 2010 as La Crosse County Parks and Natural Resources Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution made by county employees dedicated to the welfare of our parks and natural resources for the benefit of our residents and visitors of La Crosse County.
Moved by Bill Brockmiller, second by Jeff Schrader. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Next item is a follow-up to our county board retreat. Not all of you were able to get there, and at least one person didn't fill out the evaluation form. So only some of you, the select ones that weren't able to make it, or Jerry, you didn't fill out the form. If you would, please give us your input. It's actually two-sided. For those of you that weren't able to make it, it just gives us some feedback on what you think ought to be covered in retreats in the future. And then secondly, on the back side is actually identifying the top priorities for La Crosse County in the next 2 years, and then future reports that you'd like to see at our policy planning meetings. We will incorporate that into the list that was done by the four work groups of county board members and bring that back at some future time, but it allows us to make sure that even if you weren't able to be there, that we get your input, and we'll use that as guiding some of our agendas in upcoming. So if it's on your desk, it's a green sheet, please take the time to return that by the end of this month to Margaret in the chair's office. It says May 31st. We didn't want to waste paper, so we're you're beyond that deadline, but it'll still be fine if it's by the end of the month. And just as a follow-up to that, the next policy planning meeting, July 7th, the two major agenda items are actually following up some of your requests. One is we're going to do an overall report on the history and role of county economic development efforts, everything from the existing economic development fund to the revolving loan to the history of the West Salem Business Park. So I think that's going to be very useful to give that history as well as the background on the funds that are involved and how that's different from the county budget and those kinds of pieces. So be prepared for your questions and learning a great deal. The second piece will be an update and status report on the discussion around the landfill gas project and the that discussion and negotiations that are going on between the county and Gunderson Lutheran. So that's going to both very interesting, important topics for July. And then in August, so far what we have, of course, is the annual comprehensive annual financial report by our auditors, and I know that's dry for some folks, but it's very critical to our financial stability. We'll be adding other items as we go along.
All right.
Okay, and then last but not least, I do have a brief report, and then I want to get, and you'll see me do this several times during the year. I'm going to go over to the podium. we keep talking about budget. Obviously, you've had this in the county board retreat, and I'll just keep you up to date on what we're doing. Obviously, staff is starting the initial stages of the county budget process, and I have to log back in. Okay. Talk among yourselves. I have the responsibility to keep bringing you up to date on the things that we're doing with budget and some of the steps that we're taking, as well as to keep you engaged on what the next steps of the budget process debate and discussion will be. We've got an actual handout. There's only a few slides to this, and then I want to get some feedback as we're structuring our agenda, and there'll be several times during the year you'll be able to keep identifying things, additional things that you want on the agenda, because we keep taking notes of that. No surprise, there are still no easy answers. Have we got a clicker here to, okay, here we go. One of the things that I'm doing, and I think it's very important to point out, is I'm trying to get more refined of the bullet points of the exact details of what's going on. And I'm going to walk through a couple of these bullet points, but I'm doing a similar presentation with a series of bargaining unit and employee groups. And engaging them in suggestions and ideas related to our budget issues. We've also done a half-day retreat with our managers work group, which is all the department heads and next line of managers within the organization. In July's meeting, we'll be meeting with the executive committee and having some dialogue on this, but also talking about short-term and long-term bargaining strategy and being able to give some direction to our personnel department. And then, of course, June 24th next week is the actual kickoff for the actual detail work that happens with our department heads. We call it our budget workshop, and finance and myself and the others that are involved in putting that together will be working directly with our department heads on our expectations and trying to work within the budget. Some of you, I'm sure, are already reading ahead, and that's good. You will get a copy of this, but the top major budget challenges include that this year was an increase of 2.61% for 2010. It was the lowest increase of the past 11 years that we've been able to achieve, with no increase in the operating levy. The entire increase was due to phasing in of the payments for the law enforcement center. Most items were cut or held to 0% while we were absorbing over $700,000 in state cuts just in this year alone. In human services and shared revenue, in the clean sweep program, as well as other cuts. So we've come out of a very difficult year, and it's only going to get more challenging. In 2011, the last amount of LEC debt payment, as we've laddered that in, will cause a 2.7% increase with no other increase in spending. We already know that we're absorbing that next level of increase because we've broken that in. Instead of having it all impact the taxpayers in one year, we've laddered that in, and I've explained that before. The next state budget, however, doesn't begin until July 2001. I've got a timeline to show you that a little bit more graphically. Yet you have to adopt a budget as the county board in November of 2010. There's at least a state structural deficit and the loss of stimulus funds that are not able to be replaced of over $3 billion. If that stimulus is not refunded, and it doesn't look like it will be, and there's no means to determine where the cuts would be by the new governor. There are over 40 states currently earlier in their budget process, because theirs starts in July, ours starts next July, state of Wisconsin does, but economists are starting to predict a very difficult time for states and locals over the next several budget years, the next two budget years, and that if this significantly impacts the number of public employees, that it may actually accelerate or delay what happens in the recovery. A job is still a job, and if people are being laid off, which is one of the biggest impacts that's happened in our communities across the nation, this will also end up potentially delaying the economic recovery that's happening. In addition, just a fact to keep in mind as you look at some of the pie charts that we've given you, human services, courts, and public safety are already over 60% of your county levy. Many of those services are 24/7. Many are, you're either providing the service or not. You can't cut around the edges with many of those things, and very small departments can't absorb across the board cuts. So again, our challenges get very difficult. It's either you provide the services or you don't, and those are the kinds of challenges. The most complicated issue, and I'm going to give you a little bit of detail on this so that you can go away and think about it. There is a resolution that we'll talk about later on about the WCA platform regarding this, but I want to get into a few details. I've talked with Bill Brockmiller about this and others as we've gone through the legislative process. All counties are subject to the same 3% levy freeze, yet that would be insufficient to meet rising costs. That is law. That is within the governor's state budget. yet the rate limit would end up forcing deeper cuts by not permitting this county even to do the 3% levy if equalized value, the total value of property in the county, actually drops. And I'll give you some details on that. Even though we've been so frugal that we actually have underutilized the amount of levy we could under previous law, we could have been as high as $2.2 million higher per year, but we've always done what we can to try to restrict the amount of growth of spending. Included in your agenda packet, if you haven't accessed this, this is probably the best primer I've seen during my 25 years in county government that really gives you a great, in very few pages, details on the summary of services, the complexity of the funding without giving you a lot of numbers. It shows you the impact that the state of Wisconsin and the federal government have had on counties in their limitations on actually paying for the services they require us to do, while at the same time pushing that responsibility over to the local property tax. So if you have time with this, this is very good. If you have questions about it, either myself or Gary or other departments are available to help answer those things. But it shows you really the impact we have on our communities and the difficulty we have in maintaining services. This illustrates graphically the budget timeline issue. You see at the top from July of 2011 to June of 2013, the new governor's budget, whoever ends up being elected, will not be submitted to the legislature until February of 2011. If you go down below then, you see the county board's budget process is in November of 2010, and we're adopting a budget on a calendar year. Given the history of some of the budget challenges at the state of Wisconsin, but also the history of generally what they do, is when they impact or impose cuts on and decreases on local governments, counties, and cities, they generally backload those cuts into the next calendar year. So the second 6 months of 2011, I'm not saying we wouldn't have any cuts at all. We don't know what they would be, but most likely, given their last biennium, it was backloaded into the following 2 years, which is why this year was such a big impact to us from the governor's previous biennium. You notice in the final block there it says state budget cuts are likely to be most the largest impact in calendar year 12 and 13. Remember, one of the exposures that we have is, unlike many counties, we're using a very small portion of our entire budget from the property tax levy. It's about the teamwork we've had. It's about being frugal. It's about people like Jerry Huber and board members working very hard to do everything we can to maximize other revenue sources. We have a $133 million budget. Only 21% of that comes from property tax levy, 8% from solid waste. The rest is from state, federal, or fees and charges to clients like Medicaid rates or private pay rates in nursing homes or direct pay for services. So it really, when those areas aren't growing very much and they're going to limit the ability to use property taxes, it makes the challenge very big. And future county cuts, I believe, should be tied to the program areas where those cuts come from. So while you may debate and decide to exclude or eliminate programs at any given time, that's your choice and your policy decision, I will recommend that we wait to see in some sense what the impact is in future years of tying those cuts in together, because there are a number of things that are non-categorical. Shared revenue, for example, $4.6 million a year is non-categorical. It's not tied to any particular budget, not human services, not courts, but it ends up providing property tax relief across the organization. While you have other revenue sources like highway aids or youth aids or community aids that go directly to provide specific services. And I would suggest that you don't end up cutting in highway because you've got a youth aids cut, or you don't cut in courts because you've got a cut in another unrelated area. So I'll ask you to think about that as we go through here. We are going to have enough challenges just for 2011, but I think we've got to take it a step at a time rather than overreacting, not knowing what and where the state budget will actually be cut. This is the most complicated area, and I wanted to take some time before I get your feedback on things, but there are different limits on the county tax levy, and I think it's important for you to understand the details of this. Finance and I have been doing a lot of analysis about what's coming and what's impacted. There are actually three different parts to the property tax levy. I've been presenting this to employees as well. There's the operating levy, there's the library levy, there's the debt levy, and each of those are divided into your total tax base, and they come up with a separate tax rate. Those of you that have been on the board have seen those numbers a number of different times, but people will get will ask me the question quite often, well, if you've got budget challenges, how can you build a new law enforcement center addition? How can you afford to do that? If everything's restricted and you're not able to raise taxes to meet the rising costs, how can you build a law enforcement center? So I'm going to zero in on the debt. The debt levy is actually subject to a different limit than other types of funding. The debt levy is actually subject to the total cap on the amount of debt that you're actually able to issue. It's not based on how much you can levy taxes. It's based on how much debt you can actually sell that the county board, or ultimately a referendum if you went beyond this number, that the county board decides to issue. Our total debt at the end of 2010 is roughly $62 million. You'll see that detail in your financial report, well below the legal limit that you could sell under current state law of $387 million. I wouldn't see in any imagination that we would ever need to issue that much, but I want you to understand that that's what the state law says, is you're capped at 5% of your total equalized value. Frankly, we're actually a little bit better than that because about $24 million of that $62 is solid waste debt. It's never been levied a property tax to pay for. It's done through the user fee of the solid waste, so we're actually at about 9% of allowable debt. But also, those of you that have worked with me for a while know how cautious I am for us to end up dealing with much larger issues like the campus and other things. I think given the dynamics of the economy, we can't push that much more than we've been. There will be different debates and discussion about that. But that's why you can build a law enforcement center but struggle to come up with the money to staff it, is because the debt is under a different limit. You go back to the library levy, which those of you that know, the library levy is only taxing the people outside the city of La Crosse. They have their own library, so it's a separate taxing jurisdiction, and that's capped at 3%. So that's very simple, very straightforward, and not subject to the rate limit, which is the complicated item that I'll point out. So the operating levy is everything else that's not paid for by other revenue. It's wages, it's benefits, it's every other service, it's contracts that we do for service, contract cleaning in this building. You know, it's everything else that's not covered by those other two line items. Our total operating levy is $23.9 million. That gets divided into the total tax base, and it results in an operating rate of 3.08. That's what it gets impacted by the 1992 rate limit freeze. That's actually described in the book, so if you want to go through that and learn more about it, it actually describes that. So what does that actually mean and how does it work? Our 1992 operating rate limit is $3.24. The 2010 operating levy, just from the previous page, of $23.9 million divided by the equalized value of $7.75 billion comes up with $3.08. Now going into the next year, what happens? If equalized value, if the estimate that the Department of Revenue does of the total value of all businesses, land, homes, every taxable property in the county, if they come up with an estimate that it drops by 2%, that would be the first drop we've had in about two decades, but I would predict that we are going to start to see a leveling and are already seeing that of value, and we raise our levy by the 3%, that is what's allowed by all counties under the governor's budget bill, we would be able to increase revenues by $715,000, and that will make us hit the 324 in 1 year. If equalized value drops and your spending stays the same, it raises the tax rate. If spending goes up and equalized value drops, it also raises the rate higher. If equalized value, the total value of the county as estimated by Department of Revenue, drops by more than that 2%, that will even leave less authority, while counties that spend much more than us can still raise taxes much more than us to pay for underfunded and unfunded mandated services, we would be held to a different standard. Equalized value change set by the Department of Revenue doesn't come out until the end of August. We'll obviously bring that to you as quickly. Again, I'm not advocating what level our spending should be. I'm pointing out the rules of the road based on how the state of Wisconsin imposes two different types of limits and that disparate impact. I've given you a lot of this information doing comparisons. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that because I think you've seen enough of these that obviously, to some extent, your eyes start to glaze over. So how do you talk about that kind of impact when we are the fifth lowest per capita, we spend 42%, 12 million dollars less of property tax than counties of similar size? In other words, the levy in any other county of similar size is 42% higher on average than La Crosse County. So I thought a graphic might help. The average Wisconsin county of similar size, when they spend a dollar in 2010, the equivalent amount for the same amount spent by us is 58 cents. So if you were buying county government services and you could go where the best value was, we cost 58 cents versus every other county on average of similar size costs a dollar. Then when they get under the governor's budget bill 3% growth, they can increase their costs, they can increase their prices or their property tax by 3 cents. So they then will cost a dollar three if they do that. Next year, were it not for the rate limit, we couldn't even go up 2 cents. We'd be at 60 cents while that same county doing the same thing. They have the same responsibilities. By the way, we don't get any waiver for any from any mandates that anybody else has. We don't get an easier road than any of the other counties, and yet we couldn't even go to 60 cents under the 3% rule. But the rate limit would eliminate even that. I thought this was interesting. If county taxes were charged by the gallon and an average Wisconsin county of similar size charged $3, they could go up to $3.09, while our actual cost is only $1.74. If you were buying county government by the gallon, you'd end up being very pleased to be able to buy gas for under $2. Now, I hope that illustrates in a little different way the kind of challenge we have when the limits aren't tied to actual spending, when they aren't tied to actual results. And that doesn't make it any easier for property taxpayers to pay for. That doesn't make it any easier for the needs of the community to be met. It just shows and illustrates in graphic form the disparity of the rules of how counties are governed by the levy limits. This also shows the history of what we're doing. Again, if spending goes up slower than the amount of total value, new homes, new businesses, and inflation, your rate should drop. That situation has changed over the last 2 years. This year, we were able to hold the operating levy increase at zero, but equalized value went up about 2%, about exactly the same amount that our total debt payment went up, which is why you see it flat there at the end. So even if you held your entire levy to zero and equalized value dropped, the rate will go up. That's the most direct math. In addition to that, I haven't even talked about all the cost drivers and demands, increased service demand, particularly in human services and courts, limited revenues, and across the board cuts don't work in our smallest departments. You either provide the service or not. Residential care and mental health and family and children are very volatile. Lakeview operating and capital costs continue to be a challenge. Highway maintenance and capital needs we've talked about. Investment interest and sales tax revenue have helped us in previous years. They're not going to be there to any great strength until the economy comes back. And the internal pattern that has been conducive in wage and benefit settlements cannot be sustained. We don't have settlements for 2011, and we're going to be moving ahead and looking for help from employees. So the last slide I've got is to try to make sure that we're guiding, and you already identified a number of these issues in your retreat, a number of upcoming planning items. So are there top budget priorities you want us to look at? We'll keep asking this question as we go through, so this isn't your only chance, but are there items that you want us to bring back as we're going through the debate, even as part of the budget document itself?
And let me emphasize, that is not a rhetorical question. We are looking for input. So if you have suggestions tonight or over the course of the next month or two, you know, make sure that you get the word out. Talk to Steve, talk to Gary, but we do want to get as much input as possible, as many minds as we can apply to solving the dilemma, the better. So, anybody have anything tonight that you want to throw out there? Mr. Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I'd say at this point in time, I realize it's not equalized, it's assessed value, but my 160-acre farm went down $400 this year. Now, if that's true with all farms in La Crosse County, and it may be, we may see a lower of the valuation of properties. I'm not sure what's happening in town. I got a house there too, but I didn't get a notice yet. But we had open book at our township a little bit ago.
Anybody else? Jeff Schrader.
Do you have an update on Skipperliner? Does anybody?
Yeah, we can't talk about that. It's not on the agenda.
Well, it can be part of the administrator's report.
Well, we can certainly put it on a future agenda.
Yeah, we'll put it on a future agenda.
But that, again, it's not a budget item.
Yeah, as we learn things on that, we will be adding it to the agenda as we go along. Ralph Geary.
Well, when you're talking about comparing us to other counties, do you ever notice us and Eau Claire are at the bottom? Mm-hmm. And we have this, maybe we're like Eau Claire, 21% on property tax. The other counties maybe have 30, for instance, because we get more federal than state aid than them due to some reimbursement mechanisms. Because we're poor, some of the reimbursement mechanisms. When you put that up there, we don't have people from the other counties explaining why they're stuck where they're at. They would like to get the same percentage of reimbursement we do. They point to that. You get low taxes because you get a lot more money than we do, and they're trying every which way to try to get as much money as we do, but they don't. So you can't compare them like they're comparable because they really aren't.
Actually, it's because of the creativity of people like Jerry Huber pursuing grants and looking for other revenue sources that other counties aren't as aggressive. So I actually can defend that, and that's one of the reasons we're one of the best bargains in the state.
I think most of the other counties are aggressively looking for grants and anything else like everybody else. I don't think we're anything special in that area.
They're just not as successful at it, but that's all right, Ralph.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that the Tribune had something about that we're one of the top two of debt per person or debt something or other. Can you just give us your 30-second
Yeah,
on that?
With having to do still paying off the existing law enforcement center and the additional, even though we're well within bounds of what state law is, yes, we do have, as included in our entire levy, a higher debt per capita than some counties because we're doing two law enforcement centers. We're still paying off the old one and the new one. It's one of our challenges. That's why I've suggested that we need to back off at any major other capital items. Yes. And that, by the way, that information, if you want to get into detail, go to WTA's website. They've got a lot of the comparative detail. All this information I give you and put in charts and everything is from using comparative data from WTA.
Bill Feehan.
I would just like to point out that we also have a half of a percent county sales tax, and last year that raised almost $10 million. And when we consider that we have that additional $10 million of revenue, our overall tax burden doesn't look quite as favorable compared to other comparable counties.
And again, that's in your budget document. We actually controlled for all of that. There are only 10 counties that don't do the sales tax, but we've given you that data, and we're still in the lower 15% of counties statewide, even when you accommodate for that. But again, I can provide you all that background data. The charts are in the budget document, and we can give you all that base data. That's still pretty good compared to everybody, including those that don't currently levy the sales tax.
Yes, I've reviewed the budget extensively, and I've looked at the charts and compared, and the $10 million seems to be forgotten when we're talking about the tax levy, but that is money that is being taxed as well.
Any other questions or discussion? All right. Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is that it for your report then?
Yes.
Okay. Cards and correspondence, be sure to check the board on those, and no committee meetings during recess. So Tara Johnson will take the chair.
Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. I have four appointments this month, three to the Transportation Coordinating Committee and one to MRRPC.
Is there a second to the appointment? Seconded by Supervisor Mettinger. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Moved by Roger Plesha, second by Jerry Sobranek. Any discussion on that? Margaret Wood.
There were just a couple of things that I thought might have just been, either I misunderstood it or the way it was recorded. One was that the Western Cares Conference is the same date as the WCA, or should that have read that the WCA convention was at that time?
And where specifically are you reading that, Margaret?
Sure, let's see. I didn't mark it when I read it, but...
Is that like under communications and announcements, or... It says convention dates for WCA, September 26th to 28th.
It's on the last page, front of the last page at the bottom. Western Wisconsin Cares. The 2010 annual WWC conference will be in Milwaukee, September 26th to 28th. Does that mean that's running concurrently with the WCA?
Does anybody know the answer to that?
No.
You don't know?
Western Wisconsin
Cares. So it's...
And that's what
so it's probably supposed to say WCA and not WCC?
That's what I think.
All right.
Is the case.
So we'll note that correction.
And you know, there was another one, and I didn't mark it at the time. So it just talked about the county. Oh, it was about Skipperliner. So go to the Skipperliner part. So same page. So if you count up from the bold writing says subjects for future agendas, count up four lines, and three quarters of the way it says the county and the town of Campbell, who are in worse straits than we are, will have to repay the state. My understanding was that the state and the town of Campbell are in worse straits. That the portion that goes above that talks about the county not being in such straits.
Well, that is correct, that the county does not have to repay.
So
Campbell
then,
does.
So then perhaps that should read, the state and the town of Campbell, who are in worse straits than we are, because they will have to repay the state what Skipperliner does not.
That would probably be more accurate.
Is that more accurate?
I think so.
So
okay, so we'll note that as a change, too.
Okay, or maybe it's just the town of Campbell solely, no county, no state in that sentence.
Well, the state is the one ultimately who's out.
Okay. Anyway, so
All right.
Those are my only two.
Thank you. We'll note those as corrections. Anybody have any other ones? All in favor of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Executive Committee, Tara Johnson. And before you start, Tara, there is a correction on the agenda. Item 6-7 is the one that requires the two-thirds vote. 6-8 requires only majority. Okay.
Item 6-7 is a resolution. I yield the floor to Supervisor Burke to read it into the record, please.
Thank you, Supervisor Johnson. Resolution 6-7 to honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization for sheriff to purchase fingerprint system and to transfer funds from IT and jail assessment undesignated fund balance. Whereas it is necessary to replace the fingerprint equipment system in the sheriff department because the current vendor will no longer provide maintenance and support for the existing equipment. And whereas two vendors submitted proposals in response to a request for proposal process, and whereas the two proposals were evaluated by a team consisting of the jail administrator, two jail sergeants, three jailers, the IT Visionaire programmer, and the county purchasing manager, and whereas the evaluation team selected ID Networks as the most advantageous vendor at a cost of $36,840. Whereas ID Networks has a successful history of integration with Visionaire, has 24-hour, 7-day-per-week support service, and is currently used by other Wisconsin counties. And whereas the ID department is able to contribute $9,000 for this purchase due to its integration with the Visionaire software system. And whereas jail assessment funds are applicable to cover the remaining cost of this purchase because the fingerprint equipment is used to process inmates into the jail. Now, therefore, be it resolved that $27,840 be transferred from the jail assessment undesignated fund balance to the Sheriff Department for purchase of the fingerprinting system from ID Networks for $36,840. Be it further resolved that $9,000 be transferred from the IT Department budget to the Sheriff Department to complete the total funding required for this purchase. Fiscal note, jail assessment undesignated fund balance is $1,219,978 as of year 2009. Total funding being transferred to Sheriff is $36,840 as follows. $9,000 will be transferred from IT account 1040-86026 to the Sheriff account 1120-86050. $27,840 will be transferred from jail assessment undesignated fund balance to the Sheriff account 1120-86050. I move its approval and ask to speak to the motion.
Moved by Vicki Burke, second by Audrey Cotter.
Okay, you have on a second sheet which explains, gives the background of this, primarily that currently the provider was unable to give the support that was necessary. Sheriff, this was a purchase that had been anticipated for next year, but because of that lack of support services from the current vendor, they needed to make this purchase at this time. You see the evaluation that you have of the two vendors. This vendor was chosen because of, first of all, primarily, I'm talking with the sheriff, the integration with VisionAire, which is very important in their system of communicating, and also the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week support service. This support service is located closer to us than would the company that was rejected, and more user-friendly and the others that it's currently used by other counties. So I ask your support of it.
Discussion or questions? Jeff Schrader.
Am I right in assuming that Mentalix is a current provider?
No, I don't think that's the case.
I think Brian Josted or the sheriff have that answer. Brian?
No, they are not the current provider. The current provider did not provide a proposal. We asked them, and they said that it was going to cost too much money for them to provide a proposal, which we were very surprised at.
Any other questions or discussion? If not, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 6-8, to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization for La Crosse County to participate in the Wisconsin Community Development Block Grant for CenturyLink. Whereas federal monies are available under the CDBG for Economic Development Program administered by the State of Wisconsin Department of Commerce, whereas after a public hearing and due consideration, La Crosse County Economic Development Fund Board recommends that an application be submitted, and whereas La Crosse County Board has reviewed the need for the proposed project and the benefits to be gained from CenturyLink consolidating a customer service center in the city of La Crosse, thereby retaining 620 full-time positions and creating 20 new full-time positions in the city, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does approve and authorize the preparation and filing of an application for the above-named project, and the board chair is hereby authorized to sign all necessary documents on behalf of the county, and that authority is hereby granted to La Crosse County Economic Development Fund, Inc., to take the necessary steps to prepare and file the appropriate application for funds under this program and administer the loan in accordance with the Department of Commerce loan conditions. Fiscal note is $4,506,000 would come from the State of Wisconsin CDBG grant for economic development, to include $6,000 for administration by the Economic Development Fund and $4.5 million loan to CenturyLink. No local funds from either La Crosse County or the Economic Development Fund will be used as a part of the incentive package to CenturyLink. The loan repayment will be deferred until the forgiveness measurement date of December 31, 2014. For the portion not forgiven, the remaining loan balance of principal and accrued interest shall be due and payable. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Second by Vicki Burke. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Oh, wait, Mr. Ebert, did you have a... I was a little
Just give us real quick
slow.
This forgiveness measurement. Is there something built in if they provide X jobs, so much of that will be forgiven? It just sounds like...
The 600 and some plus, what is it, Bill? When is it? Bill's got it.
Basically, if they maintain the 620 jobs and create at least 20 new full-time positions through December 31st, 2014, the loan will be forgiven. That is the state of Wisconsin Department of Commerce has done that. So it's only if they don't reach that number of positions on the target date of December 31, 2014.
And if they don't, then that extra money would actually go into our revolving loan fund?
Yeah. Right.
But it would be proportionate. They don't have to repay
Correct.
Everything.
Not all,
it's,
but
right.
It's a proportion. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or discussion? All right, now let's try it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. All of... been a long day. Passed unanimously. Sorry. Tara Johnson.
Item 6-9 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding support for restoring fairness by correcting the disparate impact of the tax rate limit at a time of declining property values. Seeing as how moments ago Mr. O'Malley gave this resolution in a PowerPoint presentation, I'm going to try skipping to the now. Therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors urges the Wisconsin Counties Association to support legislation in its legislative platform to correct the disparate impact on some Wisconsin counties of the tax rate limit at a time of declining property values by adding the following exception for a county to exceed the 1992 rate limit in addition to the referendum option. So in section 59.605, parent 3, regarding tax base, it would read, if a county's allowable levy under section 66.0602, parent 1, parent D, is greater than the allowable levy under section 59.605, parent 2, then the county is exempt from the limit under 59.0605, parent 2, in that tax year, and the Department of Revenue shall modify the operating levy rate for subsequent years to this new rate. The fiscal note is, if the counties association is successful in gaining this legislative change, all counties would be subject to the same 3% limit, regardless of decline in property values because of the recession. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion. Bill Feehan.
Well, I urge my fellow supervisors to vote no on this resolution. I believe that these laws are there as safeguards for taxpayers. And as I think back to meeting the many people in the 3rd District who do not have jobs, and those who have taken significant pay cuts, and those who are on disability and Social Security who have not seen increases in their payments for 2 years, I think it's irresponsible for our county government to be offering 3.5% on average increases in wages and benefits to our county employees. That total is about $74 million, and last year the increase was $1.75 million. I think it's appropriate for our government employees to share in the hardship that people are facing, and I don't think it's fair for us to raise taxes on people and continue to give those kinds of increases to the people that work in our county. And while businesses and families are trying to find ways to do more with less, us raising their property tax burden just makes that job tougher, and so I urge my fellow supervisors to vote no.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. I'm so glad that Supervisor Feehan raised the issue of fairness, and it was actually inserted into the title of this resolution, because current law is unfair. And while Supervisor Feehan's comments are very appropriate for our budget discussion, the resolution in front of us tonight has nothing to do with 3.5% or what La Crosse County spends or may give to employees or may negotiate in labor negotiations or may set for our budget. That is not what we are talking about tonight. The resolution in front of us has to do with fairness among 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin. And currently, there is an unfair system. Counties are treated differently, and in particular, the counties that have been most fiscally conservative for decades are being treated unfairly. And we are asking in this resolution to encourage the Wisconsin Counties Association through their legislative process to restore fairness.
I have a question for Mr. O'Malley. Do we have a count of how many counties are affected by this, the rate issue?
It's 8 or 9, but as the recession continues to impact values all, and it's not tied into what someone spends or not. The other point to clarify is we will not be able to have anywhere close to the pattern of raises and issues regardless of whether or not this passes. That was the point of my presentation, was that it's about fairness. If we're going to freeze everybody's ability, then freeze everybody at the same rate. But this is not about maintaining anywhere similar to the pattern that previous years during a good economy, in fact, that's a very significant policy debate we'll need to wrestle with.
Ralph Fury.
Okay. Did you hear me?
Yes. I don't know what that's.
Tara got through the microphone before me. But there's nothing unfair. All 72 counties are treated the same. If you have a problem, you go to referendum. All 72 counties have an option of going to referendum. If you're in such dire straits, then you should be able to make a compelling case to the electorate that we need a little more money. So 72 counties are treated the same. They all go to referendum if they need it. If a person loses a job, no fault of their own, that's unfair. They're on fixed incomes, maybe that's unfair. There's a lot of things unfair, but there's nothing unfair about the system. The system says go to the people and tell them why you need more money. How fair can you get?
Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't quite understand it. This would make an exemption for 1 year for us and the 7 or 8 other counties. If that's what it says here, then the county is exempt from the limit. So for that 1 year, we could raise it, let's say, to catch up 15%, and then we'd base our next year's budget on the 15% that we raised this year. I don't quite understand what we're doing here.
Mr. O'Malley.
No, it says everyone is capped by the same 3% and that the rate limit in our case, for example, would just be readjusted to 330 or whatever the number is that needs to happen. That same 3% is always for everyone under state law. It means everyone, whether you're hit by the rate limit or not. We have the 15th lowest tax rate in the state of all 72 counties. Counties that have double our tax rate can still raise their taxes by 3%. I beg to differ with Supervisor Geary. The rates limit is completely different from the 3%. The state didn't even know that was there. You talk to legislators, they didn't even know it was there because it's such an old rule, because everybody expected values to always go up. This only affects 8 counties right now, but within the next 2 to 4 years, it will impact more counties. This is about everyone having the same 3% set by the state, and our 3% is already less money than everyone else. But it's about at least having the same percentage.
Further discussion? All in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Noes, please raise your hand. Okay, let's vote on the computer. We have a handful of folks. If you are in favor of the resolution, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Ralph, did you vote?
Twice.
You keep voting wrong if you change it to the right way. And the number. Pass on a vote of 27-7. Right. All right.
Resolution 6-10 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding approve acceptance of energy efficiency and conservation block grant contract for $219,400. Whereas the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act created the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program, including competitive local government grants, and whereas the State Department of Commerce Office of Energy Independence has approved $219,400 of EECBG funding for La Crosse County to assist with three energy conservation projects, namely $100,000 towards solar water heat for the LEC addition, $100,000 towards solar water for Lakeview Health Center, and $19,400 toward the conversion of rotary lights to light-emitting diodes, or LED technology. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board approves acceptance of the EECBG contract for $219,400 and authorizes the board chair to sign the documents upon approval of the Corporation Council, and that staff are directed to seek contractor bids for the two solar water systems to present to the county board for consideration. Be it further resolved that the county pledge of $19,400 is contingent upon a matching pledge by the city of La Crosse for $19,400 toward the rotary lights conversion to LED. And the fiscal note is the LEC construction project allocates up to $150,000 for solar water. The Lakeview capital budget has funding available due to savings in the nurse call system bids, and the sustainability budget, org 6529 line 79243 budget, has a total of $25,000 available for special energy project. I move its approval and ask to retain the floor.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been a request made to divide the question so that there would be three separate votes on this resolution, the three components, $100 for the LEC water system, $100,000 for the LEC, $100,000 for Lakeview, and the $19,400 for rotary lights.
Well, that's a motion?
I have been asked to make that motion, and I am making it at this time.
Okay, moved by Tara Johnson to divide the question, seconded by Mr. Ebert. Let's talk, what was the first? It's not debatable. Okay. All in favor of dividing the question, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, we'll vote on dividing the question. Yes, if you want to divide the question. No, if you do not. Everybody have it come up on your screen? Okay. Vote yes if you want to divide the question, no if you do not. Screwed up. Is that the last one? That won't show it to you. Okay, the problem that we have is that it is not, it seems to have taken the vote, but it's not telling us what that is. So, Ginny, I think I'm going to have you read roll call. Do you have a list? Okay. Ginny will just go through the roll call. The next vote we'll try also on the computer, and hopefully the next time it will work. But this one we'll do by a roll call. Yes, if you're in favor of dividing the question. No, if you are opposed.
Arlene Benrud?
No.
Jim Burns?
Yes.
Jill Billings?
Yes.
Jill Bilskemper?
Yes.
Don Vina?
No.
Bill Brockmiller?
Yes.
Vicki Burks?
No.
Steve Doyle?
No. Just got to be different, don't you?
Jay Johnson?
No.
Tara Johnson?
Yes.
Audrey Potter?
No.
Bob Kyle?
No.
Greg Conkle?
Yes.
Monica Cruz?
No.
Beverly Ma?
Yes.
Dennis Manti?
Yes.
John Mender?
No.
Don Meyer?
Just a majority. Okay. The motion to divide passes on a vote of 18 to 16. So let's talk about the first item on there, which would be which one? That would be the 100,000 towards solar hot water for the LAC edition. Okay. So we'll vote on that one first. Discussion on $100,000. Toward the solar hot water for the LEC edition. Any discussion? Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the LEC system, 32 4x10 collectors, it's estimated that the payback is about 10 years after the grant funding. Is there any projection or estimate in years how long this system will last or when it may have to be replaced?
Jim Spiropoulos will answer that question for us, hopefully.
Solar systems are now lasting 25 plus years.
Any other discussion? Ray Ebert.
Yes, the total cost of in putting the solar system in is $206,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
And this would be $100,000 grant, and we funded $150,000 thing, so we'd actually get some money back into our budget for the law enforcement center?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Other discussion or questions? All in favor of the $100,000 toward the solar hot water in the LEC edition, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That one carries unanimously. The next one, then, is $100,000 toward solar hot water for Lakeview Health Center. Discussion or questions on that one? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of that one, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That one carries unanimously. Third one, then, is the $19,400 toward the conversion of rotary lights to LED technology. Discussion or questions on that one? Audrey Cotter.
I have a question about it, in that has any communication happened with the city as to application or requesting the city to take care of the portion of it?
The matching? Steve O'Malley, do you have an answer?
Yes, I was with a member of the Rotary Lights board and a couple of other folks that talked directly to the mayor. I visited with you as well and talked with Wayne Delagrave. If this were to pass, there will be a letter request that would go to the city as part of the process, much like other matching grants and those types of things happen.
Okay, I just want to be sure it has not started the process. Okay,
not until you've taken action. We didn't feel it was appropriate to have a letter go out until you actually weighed in on the issue as a board.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion or questions? Ray Ebert.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Who was it that would have asked for this to be done as opposed to further funding for Hillview or Lakeview or something where it's something that if we're going to get grants that we should benefit from rather than a private a group? Whose decision was that to ask for this?
As described in the document, it was my decision. It was part of the brainstorming that we did to try to see how we could maximize and get a large number of projects done for a relatively small amount. Most of the grants that people were going for were just for one item where 100% of it would be federal. So between myself, Brian Fukuda, and Nick Nichols, we were trying to brainstorm of ways of maximizing the largest amount. So if you look at the projects that are there, we end up leveraging with a very small amount, a very large number of projects. With $219,000, we leverage through all sources over $500,000. And in previous discussions in the community about sustainability and rotary lights, it seemed like it had a lot of visibility and was a way of leveraging for a small amount of money a larger amount of resources. But yes, that was my decision, and we have the authority as staff to write grants, and then if they're approved, they come back for your consideration as a board.
And if I remember correctly, was it 3 or 4 years ago, the rotary lights went to 1 million lights, or maybe 5, I don't know what it is.
I think it's closer to 2.6 million
lights. Oh, no, lights, I'm talking how long ago. So in that, let's assume 5 years for discussion. So in that last 5 years and 1.6 million more lights, have they purchased any LED, or have they just gone the cheapest way and now we're going to bail out?
They've been, as I understand it in talking with their board, they've been trying to raise enough to convert, but they haven't been able to make this kind of an impact. So periodically they do some LED, but the cost effectiveness and expense of doing that in this large an amount would be very difficult for them.
So in other words, they have not done the energy conservation themselves, it doesn't appear, for the last X number of years as they've increased.
They've done some, but if you've got an incandescent string that's already working and you've replaced the bulbs, they've had the volunteer time and the energy to go into it, so they've replaced it as they can. Their long-term goal has always been to convert to LED, but they've never had the ability to try to, you know, have this as a goal to raise that amount of money.
Well, the possibility of not enlarging so quickly and doing it the right way, sustainable, yeah, might have been a decision. Yeah, I
can't comment.
That's right.
That.
I don't think it's the county's responsibility. Thank you.
Bill Breckmiller.
Yeah, I just had a little thing. I mean, I assume it's still correct, but I wanted to double-check point of information, whatever you call it. We split the question, but under one of the further resolves, it would still be effect if we pass this third part, I'm assuming, that the county pledge of 19-4 is contingent on matching by the city. So if the city would say, no, we don't want to, then we wouldn't either? Is that
that's correct?
Correct.
That's
correct. Yeah, I just want to double check.
Yeah. Further discussion, Bill Feehan.
I just have a simple question, and the question is, does this cost the La Crosse County taxpayer $19,400? That's a new expense, right?
No, this is in the sustainability budget, which is funded by solid waste revenues. It's not a property tax levy.
Jill Billings.
I think this is a very worthwhile investment in our community. First of all, it's the right thing to do with energy conservation. But second of all, when you look at all of the organizations that benefit from Rotary Lights and how they support the work that we do in the county through human services or law enforcement and other organizations that just make our community a better place to live, whether it be a daycare center or the Red Cross or the Brownies or Boy Scouts, this is a very worthwhile investment in our community.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up with Supervisor Billings, we have learned that we are not in this alone in any of our ventures, and this is a wonderful way that we show that we do collaborate with other groups. And for the many mandates that we have to meet by the state, we do count on other people to help those situations be met. So I'm sure that all of the foodstuffs and sharing that Rotary Lights provides in the community lessens the burden that we would have to assume at the county. So I think this is a win-win for both of us, especially for the people of our county. I don't think that hungry people really care, you know, who ultimately help them out. They're grateful for our entire community, and I would be supporting this resolution.
Dan Ferries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agreed with everybody so far on this issue. It's a very worthwhile thing, and a lot of organizations benefit from it.
Could you use your mic?
Get a little closer to the mic.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's a very a lot of benefits come from this. The issue that I have is, and I know there's a lot of the stimulus packages broke down into different segments, and this is on the energy part of it. But I'm at Menards about every other day, and I can't find light bulbs that are made in the United States. And coming from a working person, a union person, I've got an issue with this, that the stimulus money is going to be sent overseas, employed other people. When if you can put a USA on it, I'll vote for it. Otherwise, I'm not going to vote for it. But I'm in support of the Rotary. I visit it often. Thank you.
Maureen Friedland.
The Rotary Club of La Crosse should be commended for its work in providing a display that revitalizes the downtown each holiday season. Combining this effort with a food drive provides our local pantries with much-needed contributions to feed needy families. I applaud the Rotary for working to make this light display more environmentally friendly by utilizing LEDs, and I also commend our county for providing the technical assistance in securing the grant money for the conversion. However, I cannot separate these good works from the obvious fact that the Rotary Lights display has become more narrowly religious, crowding out the secular aspects, and the county money would be used to support religious activities. While I salute the outstanding service work of the Rotary and welcome private local match support of funding of the project by citizens in the area, I personally cannot, in good faith, vote for this expenditure to publicly fund a light display that narrowly celebrates the holiday season and fails to reflect the heritage and growing diversity of faiths and cultures in our community. I hope for a multicultural approach with an active lead taken by the Rotary that would add to the beauty and spirit of the Rotary Holiday Lights, where we can enjoy and learn from each other's cultural and religious traditions.
Anybody that has not spoken for a first time yet that wanted to speak? Andrea Richmond.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. O'Malley mentioned that the landfill sustainability money was going to be used for that. How much is in that budget right now that we could use?
The line item was $25,000 for a special energy project.
$25,000?
$25,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
If any portion of this gets turned down, does that in any way affect the grant, total grant?
Are you referring specifically to the solar hot water items?
Yes. Well, I would have to be.
Okay.
The other ones have already passed, but if this one gets turned down, this portion of it, does it affect the entire grant?
It's been my understanding that the each separate portion of the grant is contingent on the match. In other words, you couldn't get the $100,000 solar hot water if you didn't come up with the rest of the match. You couldn't do it in either case. If this is excluded, there would, I think, in theory, be the option that other than the county and city, the community could try to raise the rest, but that's not what's before you. That's not what's...
Okay. So
it should not put the $200,000 in jeopardy. Each is on their own.
Each project has its own match.
Right. Now, that's not the way the contract's written. Now, we'd have to resubmit, but we did ask that question to OEI.
Okay. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Schrader asked my question, so my question is answered.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. This comes up sporadically when we apply for grants or adopt budgets outside the county realm. I'm happy with Rotary Lights, but I was thinking about the airport. We used to give them $200,000 a year. This is a first-class airport, and people other than that live in the city of La Crosse use that airport, and it is an A-plus airport. And now we're down to $4,000 a year. I seem to request this every year because one of these things will come up. aren't we going to get some kind of policy or criteria or something? So for its Rotary Lights, the City of La Crosse, the Town on Alaska, whoever is asking us for something, that they should meet some criteria. Because I'm thinking about the airport going from 200,000, 250,000 down to 4,000, you know. And being so conservative, I was always in favor of giving them a lot of money for that airport. But that's my point.
If anybody wants to work on that, I don't know how you come up with a policy that encompasses airports, Rotary Lights, well, LADCO, everything else. I mean, that may be kind of difficult, but we could certainly bring that in. I mean, if somebody wants to do a committee to investigate a policy or whatever, great.
I got a different one going right now.
Right, I know you do, but you could do another one. Bill Brockmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was struck by Supervisor Wood's comments, and I wanted to echo them. I think it's an outstanding point she made that the food that's collected and the work that Rotary Rights and the Rotary itself does eases the burden or helps share the burden that the county is going through right now. I mean, as I think we all know, our revenues decline at the very same time that our residents are the neediest, and I think the Rotary and the Lights help ease the burden and help us meet the needs of our residents.
Marilyn Pedretti.
First of all, on the Sustainable Commission, La Crosse Sustainable Commission, overwhelmingly approved this. We thought this was exactly what we've been tasked to do by having our sustainable strategy. Rotary has to do the fundraising, correct, for the 106,000? I mean, that's, they're doing a fundraising effort.
Including the matches that are there, that would be Rotary's job.
Right. So ours is a small portion of that. It's not like we're funding the whole thing. We're matching the whole thing, correct?
Right. It's the amounts listed there. Right.
Yeah. And so I guess for me, it's leading by example. I mean, there are people who come from all over to see this and to show that we think that energy efficiency and being on the cutting edge is important and that LEDs are certainly the wave of the future. I wholeheartedly support it.
All right, did I miss anybody who had not had a chance to speak a first time? Joe Bilskemper.
Okay. Owning a Christmas decorating business, I have some knowledge of cost of lights. Is this $129,000 one time, or is this going to be, or is this, they're going to replace, you say, over 2 million lights for $129,000 with LED lights?
The actual quantity that's there, I had heard numbers referred to as 2.6 million of lights, but the on the back page shows you the quantities that would be purchased that are there, and then additional rope lights. So that actually identifies the specific quantities and how the estimate was arrived.
Where are the quantity of lights?
Bulb quantity, unit price, grand total.
Where is that?
It's on the back page that looks like this.
Oh.
It's in your packet. Oh. I just heard quotes of 2.6. Okay. I don't know what's...
So those figures look correct.
Okay.
LED lights run, I buy them for like $1.13 each. And I know that LED mini lights are five times what incandescents are. They burn for 50,000 hours as opposed to 3,000. It's a good investment. I'm wondering if this is not enough money. That's all. It seems like an awful lot of lights to replace. That's just my comments. I think it's a good idea.
Anybody else not have a chance to speak the first time? Jerry Sobranek.
Didn't you say they were going to replace half this year and the other half next year?
Yes, that's the process that they're going through because they can't do it all in one year. They also don't want to waste the ones that they've just replaced, and so that would be part of it. But it all has to be completed and ordered by the end of the year. There's only so much they can do it at a time.
Okay, anybody else for a first time? Second timers, Mr. Feehan, I saw your hand.
I just like some clarification from the administrator. He said that this money does not come from our county tax dollar, so I'm curious where the money does come from. You mentioned the budget that it's coming from, the sustainability budget from the landfill. Are those monies from the tipping fees that the county collects then? So aren't we really just asking the people that dispose of garbage at the landfill to make a donation to Rotary Lights, which is a private charity? I think it's a bad policy for the county to pick and choose which charities we're going to support.
If I can respond to that, the question very clearly is we provide a sustainability budget from the landfill tipping fees. Included in that is energy conservation and those types of things. The policy question is whether or not you agree with that recommendation.
All right. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I think part of, in addition to the benefit that is to the county with the food that's gathered and distributed, that saves us quite a bit in relation to our human services budgets and serving the people. We also have the tourism impact and the economic development impact. It draws people from all over. It fills our hotels, it fills our restaurants, it causes people to spend money on gas, so on. So it's not only for the benefit of the citizens of La Crosse who go to view it, it is also for the benefit of the businesses in the La Crosse area that benefit from the additional traffic brought in. And it's I don't have those numbers, but I know that it's very significant. Thank you.
All right. Is there anybody else, or are we about ready to vote? Ray Ebert.
Yes, just as far as the charity, like St. Clair Mission does a heck of a job for us. The other question is, when people get money from a food bank, does that get reported as income for them qualifying or not qualifying for county benefits? Can someone answer that, please?
Well, Jerry Huber, do you know the answer to that? We're not going to let you out of town that easy. If a person gets food from a food basket, do they have to report that for purposes of qualifying for county benefits?
Yeah.
All right. The answer is no.
Okay. And the other thing, as far as tourism and stuff, I would think the shrine probably brings in more people than that, and yet I don't see us lining up to give money to the Good Mayor's shrine. So I think this is just a false thing and not the business of county to be in. Thank you.
All right. We ready to take a vote? Okay, vote on the computer. If you are in favor of the $19,400 for Rotary Lights, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Technical difficulties. We won't be voting on the computer anymore tonight. We'll have to do another roll call on this one. Well, it was our IT department that wrote the program, so that means it's going to be easier to fix rather than bringing somebody in. All right, Jenny's going to do the roll call. Yes.
Ray Ebert?
No.
Bill Feehan?
No.
Dan Ferry?
No.
Bridget Flood?
Yes.
Maureen Friedland?
No.
Tammy Gamera?
Yes.
Ralph Geary?
Aye.
Sharon Jay Johnson?
Yes.
Tara Johnson?
Yes.
Audrey Cotter?
Yes.
Bob Kyle?
Yes.
Greg Conkle?
Yes.
Monica Cruz? Beverly Mock?
Yes.
Ennis Manti?
No.
John Medinger?
No.
Don Meyer?
Yes.
Marilyn Pedretti?
Yes, yes.
Leon Papp?
Yes.
Roger Plusha?
Yes.
Andrea Richmond?
Aye.
Jeff Schrader?
Yes.
Joseph Braddock?
Yes.
Charles Spiker?
Yes.
Tina Weir?
Yes.
Mark Margaret Wood?
Yes.
Arlene Benrod?
Yes.
Passes on a vote of 27-7. Is that it for you, Tara Johnson? Thank you, ma'am. And that gets us to Planning, Resource, and Development. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to say the minutes that don't reflect what really happened. That was the night of the Great La Crosse blackout. And Jeff Blushkin and the guys got 320 revamped so the crowd could get in. We readjusted the tables, and it worked out quite well. Some people said we work in the dark anyway, but we proved them wrong. So it did come back on at 7:15, so it rolled along. I'd recommend you get your minutes out, the PRD minutes, because we're going to talk about this particular petition probably in quite a bit of detail, and there's 9 pages of notes, so you may pick up some answers in there that you may have a question on. So we have item 6-11, zoning petition number 1841, filed by Thomas Citra, acting on behalf of Maple Grove Country Club Incorporated, Craig S. Rady, and Ron Hauser, CEO Kent D. and Darlene D. Chaplin, to rezone parcel one from Residential District C to Commercial District B, and Parcel 2 to Residential District A to Agriculture District B in the town of Hamilton. If you'll note that on your blue sheet, the committee divided the question, so we voted two different ways on it. So I move for your approval as presented to you in your packet. But first, I'd like to have Jeff Blushkin step forward and kind of fill us in with some of the details of this.
Time out. So it's not divided coming in? The committee had divided it? Is what?
If you vote on the two questions separately, it'll work, yes.
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
You can't combine them.
Right. No, I think that he's asking for approval of the first of the two. Is that it?
Right.
Okay.
I thought you combined them.
Well, he read it all as one, but then he said that there were actually two separate votes.
My idea was to vote twice, just like we did, parcel one and parcel two.
Okay. So you are moving for parcel one for approval?
To deny parcel one.
Okay, so your motion is to deny on parcel one. Is there a second on that? Seconded by Bridget Flood. Before we have any discussion, I want Mr. Blushkin to explain to the committee what the two are, so that people understand there are two separate issues here, and so you know what you're voting on.
The map will be a great help on the back.
Okay, so take the map out, and Jeff, can you explain to us?
Yes, if I could have Jenny pull up another map, too, so everybody can take a look at the aerial view on this. And I'm going to be using my pointer, Mr. Chairman, so I'm not going to give you any surgery here. But
thank you.
Just so it's very, very clear, this was a very simple application. These two parcels in this corner here are referred to as parcel one, even though there's two parcels. This parcel and this parcel and this parcel are considered parcel number two. The committee denied this one and this one for parking, and they approved these three parcels for continued golf course operation. Okay? And normally we don't like to see applications that have dual zoning on them, but in this case we went along with it. What had happened here was, on the original application, Mr. Cerisa has a commercial operation right here, along with the entire golf course operation here, and it's known as Maple Grove Country Club. And we found out that he'd been parking cars in these two areas for cross-country meets and for overflow of banquet functions here. And we don't know exactly how many years he was doing that, but He'd made an application for a concert here on June 12th. And part of our dealings with large assemblies, we deal with the Sheriff's Department because they have to make an application for any gatherings that have over 1,000 people, okay? So the sheriff came to us and indicated, is it okay to park in these two spots? And we said, no. This area is zoned residential district C. It's multifamily only. So we contacted Mr. Cerisa. He came in, he made his application. We gave him a bunch of different options at the time, and he picked a proposal that included these two parcels to become commercial. Our commercial district, does allow for parking, commercial parking. So the public hearing was held, like the chairman indicated. We did our part to save energy. We did it in the dark. And we took this application actually out of order because there was a lot of people there and it was getting very hot in that room. I mean, not tempers, but hot, temperature hot. So anyway, the committee did a very, very good job. There was a lot of people that spoke in opposition from this development along here because some were directly across the street from it. The committee made a recommendation to split the vote on it, and they like I indicated, they made a motion to deny this and approve these. Subsequent to the public hearing, we received a protest petition. And it was turned in on time to the county clerk. They turned it in to me on June 14th, which is way ahead of the county board meeting. It gave me the opportunity to verify the signatures that were on that application. And I did find out that there was over the required 51% of the adjacent property owners that did sign the application in opposition. When the protest petition, and this is very important, when the petition was circulated, they had attached to it our zoning notice, the publication. Now on that, it only indicates the two parcels and it only talks about parking down here and continued golf course. So that's all that was discussed. But after that, actually at the same time that the protest petition was filed, there was a cover letter from one of the circulators. And that might end up clearing up the other letter that you got or email that you got from Mr. Cerisa, indicating that there's some confusion. One of the circulators had indicated that on May 10th, Mr. Cerisa had discussed this upcoming event with some of his neighbors. He also discussed the fact that he was going to do some construction on this parcel right here, I believe. They called it an L-shaped condo or something, which is allowed. Now, in the email from Mr. Cerisa, he's indicating that there was some confusion that indicated that the petitioners were indicating there was going to be some construction involved. That was not part of the application. It only had two parts, the parking and the golf course. So what the protest petition actually does, it doesn't affect part one, which is the parking lot, because the committee did what the protesters are asking. They asked for the denial. But it forces the county board to pass the part that they passed up here by 3/4 of a vote. And we consider that house cleaning and something that should have been done. We also asked Mr. Cerisa to zone the whole golf course to Agricultural District A, and that didn't come about. But so all in all, it was actually a real clean public hearing. And as far as I'm concerned, all the evidence came out during the public hearing, and there's no need to refer this back. So the only thing that you guys have to answer right now is part two, but you're voting on part one, is you have to pass part two by a 3/4 vote.
Okay, what is before the board at this point then is parcel one, which is those two in the lower right-hand corner. Is everybody clear on what the issue is that we're voting on now? It's the parking area. Okay? Discussion on that issue only. I don't want to get into the other stuff yet. Mr. Geary.
Okay. You said something about that zoning. He couldn't increase his parking. He can't increase the number. He can't. Well, what if his business increases or something? Does he have adequate parking? I'm not talking about this concert. I mean, his wedding reception, business, and all that stuff. Has he got adequate parking there for that those operations?
Well, I'm going to give you a little bit more background, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
If you're answering his question.
Yes. In 1978, all the land that you see here outlined in red, a majority of it, was zoned Residential District A, okay, for subdivision. At the same time, actually it was the previous petition, Mr. Cerisa, the original owner, had some land right here zoned commercial for the Maple Grove operation. At that time, it was just the country club, a supper club, those kinds of things. After time, and there was adequate parking, okay? I can't remember what year, but the Cerises added a sports complex to the middle of this thing. It's right about right here. That did take some significant area out of the parking that wasn't added on anywhere else. To complicate Mr. Cerises' issue here, part of what he's got zoned commercial is a drainage ditch that drains about 600 and some acres right through the golf course. So even though that's zoned commercial, he can park cars down there, but it's not adequate. You know, if it's raining, there's water running through there. And then the other portion of what he has zoned commercial, which he could park on right now, is the first tee box for hole number one.
And that probably they frown on, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, yeah, and that's true, and that did come up, because being a golf course, he can park anywhere he wants on the entire golf course. That zoning district also allows campgrounds, get-togethers, those kinds of things. That's the district where you would do big, large gatherings like this. So it's really his decision to do that. So the part two of the equation then, this part right here is his driving range. And when he came in to amend the large assembly permit that was denied down here then, he's parking all of his cars down here now. And in the minutes, you can see that he'd indicated that he can get about 3,000 to 5,000 cars down there. And I guess because we're not talking about adequate parking, you know, for every single function, could he use this for the functions that he's looking at? Yes, he's not going to lose the opportunity to park down there. Actually, he could park anywhere except in the residential.
Other questions or discussion? Mr. Meyer.
Jeff, you want to hit on the road going in and out there, so how inadequate it might be?
Okay. A lot of the protesters that signed the protest petition were from this area. And the main concern was for their objection, and there were some at the public hearing, that indicated that this is a private road. It's not a town road. It's private, and it's owned by a homeowners association, and the commercial use of that is not allowed. Okay, this residential subdivision also has a note on the plat that there's no access to this piece here for parking or access from County Road B. So the only way to get to these lots, these residential lots, is through this private drive right here. And all of them had indicated in the protest petition that they were against the noise, the traffic congestion, the safety for the families that were out there. There's no street lighting. The road is already broken up to some degree, and they didn't want to have to pay for a commercial use of the thing. So that answers Mr. Myers.
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it was long enough ago that I've forgotten. What was the protest petition asking for relief from? Or what were they asking?
The protest petition had our zoning application attached to it. So they were basically objecting, all the notes objected to the parking here. None of them objected to this part up here, but it was included on the application when it was circulated. So they're really, in by actuality, objecting to both parcel A or parcel 1 and 2.
And then you went on to say that the committee resolved that by splitting
the vote.
And so they took care of that.
Yes.
So it was, so the petition was all of their requests or points that they made had to do with the parking parcels.
Parking parcels.
Thank you.
And Tara, I want to follow up on your question and ask Bill Shepard. Normally a protest petition means that it's going to take a three-quarters vote, but if the motion out of committee was no, does it mean that it takes a three-quarters vote to agree with the committee saying no? So I want Bill to comment on what the practical, this is a mess from legality standpoint in terms of what it applies to and what the vote is, and I want Bill to lay it out so that everybody understands really where we're at in that regard.
Well, the statute clearly provides that a protest petition can be filed against a proposed amendment. And in this case, there were the two parcels that were proposed to be amended. However, only one of those parcels, that being parcel 2, was actually granted. The parcel 1 was not granted. So the only effect that the protest petition has is on parcel 2. In other words, parcel 1, the committee denied that that requested rezoning. The vote on that is only a majority. On parcel 2, the committee did grant that request, so the protest petition is effective there. The vote on that parcel number 2, is three-fourths of the members of the board present and voting.
Dandina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask Jeff, since the approval we made was with the two interior parcels, which are totally surrounded by his own land, what do you consider within 300 feet to cause the protest petition? Are you looking at his whole parcel, even though we only rezoned two pieces within that?
That is correct.
So the whole total circumference,
yes,
which includes the interstate on the other side too. Then I'm assuming.
If you follow my pointer here,
yep,
it goes all the way up to the Meyer property, which is off the map, but it's just right up here. Goes out to the interstate, comes all the way down to, there's a government lot line right here, and the farmer down here, the Ginches, own to the west of this. So it's the perimeter, that's the perimeter. Even though we're talking about interior parcels, the zoning ordinance was amended some time ago to indicate, because we had some applications where they were doing just this. They were rezoning something in the middle of something, and if you went 300 feet, you wouldn't come across another property owner, so nobody would get a notice. So the ordinance was changed to take it to the outside boundaries of the parcel that the applicant owned.
Okay, so does DOT get a vote on this then?
No. The roads are accepted.
So it would have to be the people on the other side of the interstate?
Yes, and that's Mike Collins over here.
Wondering how far that went. Yes, sir. Monica Cruz.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just need a clarification. Are we voting here on allowing Mr. Cerisa to have concerts in the future? Is that why all of this
is being
done, or is there like a greater reason for rezoning this thing?
No.
Is that what the protest was about?
No.
That was also not. Okay.
Nope.
So totally divorced from that. Okay.
Nope.
Tina Weirs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent the neighborhood there that's across from the requested rezoning, and I was on the phone nonstop with the neighbors that signed the petition, probably 30 hours worth of questions and what is this allow and all that. So they did their research. They did not want to not allow Mr. Cerisa to have the concert. They were concerned about the safety. That road right there, the private drive, also I want to point out that's the only access, and it is not a road that's built to town specs. It's basically a one-lane road. So if you have, 1,500 cars coming in there, trying to come in there, whatever, for an event, coming down that road, it's hard for the residents to get out and plan for that. So they weren't trying to not allow Mr. Cerisa to have the concert. And the concert did happen last week, and the parking went well. Everything went fine. The neighbors, no complaints. They parked in the driving range there, and it was indicated that everything went well. The town board then held a meeting on this past Monday for another request for another concert permit. That passed on the condition that the parking stays the way it is now, that the zoning remains the way that the zoning or that the planning committee approved. So just a little background.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Jeff Schrader.
Just one other point here for clarification. In this email that I received from Mr. Cerisa, it says that there seems to be a discrepancy between the town of Hamilton and the county regarding the comprehensive plan. Can you comment on that, Jeff?
Yes. There really is no confusion. If the county board remembers, we end up adopting the town's plans. And the towns usually have, and I don't know how many categories the town of Hamilton has, but they get into the micro planning, almost every single lot, something like that. And then once the county gets the plan, we end up combining residential districts, where the town of Hamilton might have single-family residential, duplexes, multifamily. We call it residential. And then for anything that would be considered golf course, we would be looking at that, or anything that's commercial, non-residential, where the town might call it commercial, specifically commercial. So the interpretation of that by the town, we don't interpret the towns or enforce that. We enforce ours. So we don't think there was any confusion.
Any further? You'll
notice in the minutes that we asked some questions about, we called the two parcels in parcel one residential. They called theirs mixed use. And we don't know what their mixed use classification is. So that might be where the confusion's coming from.
Further discussion or questions? Chuck Spiker.
Just one question. What did the town think of what the committee did?
The town had given approval prior to our meeting, so their recommendation was to approve.
Approve the whole thing?
The whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Jerry Sobranek.
I call the question.
We had one more hand, because I think Tina Weirs was going to respond to that.
But then after, because at the original town board meeting, nobody really knew that this was coming up. The residents did not know. So once the residents found out that this was going to the county zoning committee, that was when they got their ears full, too, from the residents there, that they wanted this to be denied. So that is why this past Monday, after the concert happened, they approved another permit for a concert on the condition that the committee's report is accepted.
When you say the committee, you're talking the county committee?
The county planning committee.
Okay. All right. Ready for a vote on this one? Okay, this is on just the parking, those two parcels in the lower corner. And the motion is to deny the zoning change. Clear on that? So a yes means a no, and a no means a yes. So if you are in favor of the committee report, which is to deny, say yes. If you are opposed to what the committee did, say no. All in favor of the committee report, which is to deny the application, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay. The committee report is adopted on a unanimous vote. That now gets us to the second issue, which is those other three parcels. I have a question for Jeff. Jeff, now this does require the three-quarters vote.
Yes.
What would be the effect of this failing? In other words, would he have to quit golfing?
They'd have to quit golfing out there because it's residential.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Discussion. Don Bina.
Well,
it scares the heck out of me. He's got a big investment in a golf course and a system out there, and if we don't allow him to do something with his own land, we're gonna probably put him out of business eventually, and I don't really want to see that. He does a lot of good for the community out there. So we voted to accept these two, and I hope everybody else does too.
And even one more clarification, Jeff. If the board would turn down that petition, when could he come back and ask for another vote?
1 year.
A year.
Okay, so there would be no golfing for a year.
Right.
Okay. Bill Feehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question regards that sliver that's part of the second group that runs along that hole, and the reason for denying parking in the first two areas is because of the traffic down the residential road and the concerns of the local citizens. If that's zoned as part of the golf course, is it possible that they would be parking cars there?
In this parcel right here? That is actually, if I've got that right, that's number 18 coming back to the clubhouse. And there's no access to that from the road. And there's a drainage ditch, and Mr. Sarisa indicated that he would not like anybody crossing this drainage ditch. So could they park there? Yes, they could park anywhere on the golf course that they wanted. But
there's not road access through the residential area to that spot?
No, there's not.
Tina Weirs, did you have your hand up? Okay. Other, Ralph Geary.
Is there something like adverse possession? I mean, if he's been doing it for a golf course for so many years, or why didn't we, did anybody in the zoning department know that we had didn't clean this up right or something?
Well, it's not that it wasn't cleaned up. The golf course was basically there before the county zoning ordinance in 1953. So the original operation that was out there was grandfathered in, and it still is. The reason that he's rezoning these parcels is because I had mentioned that in 1978 he laid out a residential subdivision that never happened. So this got rezoned to Residential District A. But you can have a golf course on Residential A. That's why we're considering this a cleanup. Okay?
All right. The issue before you at this point is approval of the petition to rezone those three parcels that would be then used for golf course purposes, which would be approving the adopting the committee report, which is to approve. Everybody clear on that?
Yes.
And this,
yes.
Okay, yes means yes on this one. Thank you, Mr. Ebert. Yes means yes, but it does require a three-quarters vote in that regard. All in favor of that zoning petition, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, that carries unanimously. All right. Mr. Meyer, I hope the rest of these are easier.
Well, we'll see. Item 16-12, zoning petition 1839, filed by Dave Cornell, agent for Clements Family Incorporated, doing business as Fox Hollow Golf Course, Roadside, and Fox Hollow Banquets, and acting on behalf of Donna Timmerman to rezone from Agriculture District A to Commercial District B in the town of Barrie. This was voted 5-0 to approve. I move for your approval.
Motion by Mr. Meyer. Who was the second? Mr.
Dennis.
Geary?
Or Dennis.
Mr. Okay, we'll put Mr. Geary. I was talking with the clerk. We're trying to figure out if the voting system is or is not working at this point, and it is kind of working, maybe. We're sure that it's kind of working, maybe. Discussion on this one. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 16-13, conditional use permit number 1810, filed by Stephen and Linda Hockenberry to operate a construction business with outside storage of an 8.5 by 18 foot enclosed trailer on 0.5 acres of zoned residential district A in the town of Campbell. This petition was approved and had seven conditions on it, and I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Jeff Schrader to approve subject to the seven conditions. Any discussion on this one? Okay, we're going to try an experiment. We're going to vote on this one on the computer to see if really it may be working. So if you're in favor, vote yes. If you're opposed, vote no. We don't. You have a but we don't. Yeah, we got a big error thing. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. We're going to figure it out by the next meeting. All right, keep going, Mr. Meyer.
Zoning position, or item 16-14, zoning petition 1840, filed by Joseph W. Katchever and Tammy A. Prodib to rezone residential District A to residential District A in the town of Madurai. Residential District A to Agriculture A. District A, okay, in the town of Madurai. This passed unanimously, and I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Montai. Any discussion? Was a deny? Mr. Meyer, your motion then is to adopt the committee report, which was to deny?
To deny, that's correct.
Okay, so the motion is to deny the application. So yes means no on this one again. All right, all in favor of denying, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 16-15, zoning petition 1842, filed by James and Roberta Degenhart, acting on behalf of Robert and Gloria Noodleman and the Noodleman Trust to rezone from Transitional Agriculture District to Agriculture District E in the town of Hamilton. This did pass, was approved unanimously by the committee. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 16-6, zoning petition number 1843, filed by Phyllis and Richard Thaldorf to rezone from Exclusive Agriculture District to Agriculture District A in the town of Farmington. This one was approved unanimously, and I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Schrader. Any discussion on this one? Mr. Paff.
Yes, I just wanted to add that I have the petition from this one working? Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. From the town of Farmington, yes, that was not included.
Leanne, I think you just need to get closer.
When they came to before the zoning board there, they didn't have the petition from the town of Farmington, but they do now. I have a copy of it right here if they need it. And there was also a question on this, why they had to pay to have it rezoned 10 years after the fact. And this was a question for Mr. Blusky. I don't know if this is an appropriate time to ask for it or not. I'd like to have him explain why the Thaldorfs had to come forward 10 years later when they come to get a building permit for a small shed at the expense of about $3,000 to them to have it surveyed and rezoned, and if the county is going to pick that up for them or not.
I doubt it, but we'll have Jeff answer.
In answer to the question, in 1996, when the Thaldorfs originally came in to see us to put up their first home, they had over 35 acres, and that is the requirement in our exclusive ag district. That's the smallest acreage that you can have. So what had happened, there was a couple girls in the family that ended up getting all this land together, and Phyllis Thaldorf gave half of it to her other sister. And that transfer slipped past us whenever it happened in the early 2000s. And we only catch those things when they come in to do additional construction. In this case, Mrs. Thaldorf came in and she wanted to put up this shed to store some of their stuff. And we indicated, you only have 17 acres. You're going to have to rezone this. Well, our advice is not to rezone the whole 17, because as of January 1st, anybody that rezones out of exclusive ag has to pay that $622 conversion fee, because we're trying to keep land in agricultural production and not have it in residential. So the town of Farmington has a 2-acre minimum requirement, so they had to split that off, and they only paid $1,200 for that conversion fee, and the county doesn't keep that. That goes to the state. So her rezoning fee was only $372.
Correct, but she had to hire a surveyor in order to do it, mm-hmm. and their, mm-hmm. their total costs are not $1,200.
Okay. In order to come up with a legal description, we can't do that for them. They have to hire a surveyor. That's why.
Needless to say, she's very unhappy with the apartment.
Yeah. She vented.
She has told you that.
She vented, believe me. Yeah.
I couldn't. The record will so reflect. All right, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That was not with an amendment, Mr. Paff, right? There was, we were not. All right, good. One more for you, Mr. Meyer.
Item 16-7, authorization to support for an application for Wisconsin Working Lands Initiative Purchase of Agriculture Conversion Easement Program, known as PACE. Whereas the Farmland Preservation Committee has received applications from property owners in La Crosse County for the purchase of agriculture conversion easement of their properties, and whereas the Farmland Preservation Committee has addressed these applications and determined the properties listed on attached on Exhibit A met the general purpose objectives and provisions of the PACE program set forth in Chapter 32, and the purchases of agriculture conversion easement said properties is comparable to the county's long-range goals regarding the farmland preservation, and said properties are located within the areas designated for the Farmland Preservation La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan and Farmland Preservation Plan. Whereas Planning Resource and Development Committee has reviewed the recommendations of Farmland Preservation Committee and approves the applications of conversion easements listed in Exhibit A, and recommends the County Board approve the applications for submittal to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Now, therefore, be it resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the applications to convey conversion easements set forth in Exhibit A, and certifies that the purchase of easements is nominated properties in comparable for long-range farmland preservation of La Crosse County. Be it further resolved that the county planner will submit a resolution and other necessary documentation to the Wisconsin County or Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protective for consideration of grant funding, and the landowners also shall be notified of the approval of their application by the county board. Physical note, the funding for staff on the PACE program was included in the 2010 budget, and other funding in the program will come from state grants and payment from each land order in La Crosse County, and the costs incurred will be conveyed to the easement of their property. I move for your approval of this resolution, and I'd like to have Charlie Handy come forward and speak to it if any questions that anyone has.
Moved by Mr. Myers, is there a second? Second by Tara Johnson. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Handy? Looks like nope. All in favor of any discussion at all? All in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it for today.
Thank you, sir. Health and Human Services Board, Jill Billings.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. I have item 6-18, a resolution to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding age of juvenile court jurisdiction. Whereas the state of Wisconsin in the 1990s began to rewrite the Juvenile Code, Chapter 938 of Wisconsin statutes, to reflect the national policy focusing on accountability and public safety, and whereas a specific modification of the Juvenile Code in Wisconsin during the 1990s was changing the age of adult jurisdiction to 17 years of age from 18 years of age, and whereas current research indicates that in most cases juveniles are best served and the interests of the community are best protected from juvenile criminal behavior when the presumptive age for circuit court jurisdiction is age 18 years, and whereas if the age of adult jurisdiction is returned to 18, all 17-year-old offenders will once again become the responsibility of county human social services departments, And whereas, as state funding to counties for juvenile corrections or youth aids is already insufficient, full support of a change in the age of juvenile court jurisdiction cannot occur unless full funding is provided to counties to offset the costs of serving 17-year-old delinquents. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors indicates their support to change the age of adult jurisdiction back to 18 years of age based on current research in adolescent development and best practice. And be it further resolved that this change in having 17-year-olds back into the juvenile justice system only takes place provided counties in Wisconsin are fully funded by the state to provide the array of services needed should this population become the responsibility of the counties. And be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors recommends to the state a legislative fiscal bureau study to determine the true costs to counties to implement this change in the juvenile and adult criminal codes and potential ways in which to fund the change. And be it further resolved that this resolution be shared with the Wisconsin Counties Association, Wisconsin County Human Services Association, and the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Fiscal note, no fiscal impact on La Crosse County to request this study, and I move for its approval.
Moved by Jill Billings. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Meyer. Discussion, John Menninger.
Yes, I have an amendment. It's on everybody's desk. Is this the time to take up that amendment?
This would be the time.
Okay, I tried to amend it in the legislative committee, but said we couldn't do that, so we had to do it on the floor. And I look at this as really just kind of cleaning it up a little bit, and I worked with County Supervisor Friedland on it too, who also serves on the legislative committee. And there's really kind of a couple things here. There's the 17-year-olds in juvenile court, and then there's also the question of paying for it. You kind of been beating it over the head to hear about unfunded mandates, and I think we all understand that. But I thought that one, be it further resolved, was redundant. We already said it in the whereas clause. And cannot, I mean, we can't use the word cannot when you're dealing with a legislature, so you should use the word should not. And then should not do it, and else the state pays for it. And then also in another beat for the resolve, we look at alternative ways to pay for it. So I don't look at this as anything significant as much as cleaning it up, and hopefully you'll support the amendment.
The amendment is made by Mr. Menninger, seconded by Maureen Friedland. Discussion on the amendment, first of all. Any discussion on the amendment? Jill Billings.
I have lobbied on this issue three times in the Capitol. So I understand these torn feelings of this is the right thing to do. But the problem is if funding doesn't follow, this will be a hardship on counties. I'm asking if Jerry Huber is interested in talking to the resolution. Why we included the strong language of cannot and instead of should not, and that why we wanted to be fully funded by the state.
Jerry, have you seen the amendment? Okay.
I don't have any problem with Supervisor Menninger's changes. The only thing I added that I've basically felt that every time the state has talked about this, they never really have looked at the true significance of funding to counties and basically the request of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau actually look at what the cost is to the state and also the counties. But the changes in wording, I don't think, really reflect any significance.
Okay. Still on the amendment, Maureen Friedland.
Okay. While there does seem to be growing momentum in public opinion in the legislature to return juveniles in many situations to juvenile court, especially if judges have discretion to decide if adult jurisdiction is actually more appropriate, it isn't so clear to me that changing the law about 17-year-olds has been fully embraced by legislators or the public. I hear that when you're 17, you're supposed to know what you're doing, even though you're not old enough to vote or to contract. The purpose of the amendment is to strengthen the message that 17-year-olds should be in juvenile jurisdiction. Of course, funding will be absolutely necessary. Juvenile jurisdiction embraces treatment, sometimes foster care or other placements, case management from social workers instead of by probation agents with larger cases and less resources. The goal is more clearly rehabilitation while still combined with punishment. According to the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, 17-year-olds have an 80% chance of recidivism. They have permanent records to hinder them from better employment opportunities instead of the chance for rehabilitation and treatment programming that's generally available in the juvenile justice system. It's all very costly, and I don't overlook this for a second. Unfunded mandates are detrimental, and obviously funding is going to have to follow from state and federal sources. But I think we need to know the true costs of a change in the law. There seems to me to be some wide differences of opinion and even speculation as to how much this will cost, with some literature even suggesting that the costs will be much less than feared, especially considering that rehabilitation potential as opposed to high recidivism will be the result. And there's also certain procedures in juvenile cases that, if incorporated, could actually lower the estimated costs. So I'd like to resolve the cost issues, but now I'd like to see us set a clear message that La Crosse County favors a clear message that the La Crosse County focus is in favor of increasing the age of delinquency to include 17-year-olds and figuring out the true costs of funding the needing programs to rehabilitate these young people who are our future.
Any further discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment carries unanimously. We are now on the resolution as amended. Any discussion on that? Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be difficult to ask because I don't see the certain people here, but maybe Supervisor Burke, you could, if you know, as the chair of your committee, the answer to this, I'd appreciate it. I guess I'd be interested to know the opinion of the sheriff department and the district attorney's office regarding this resolution, if they have one.
In the discussion we've had at Criminal Justice Management Council, we haven't had opposition from either the district attorney or the sheriff. The truth of the matter is that we have very few 17-year-olds that end up in our secure jail.
Okay. So
One clarification on that, Vicki. At Criminal Justice Management Council, Tim Grinke did speak against it. He said he was wishy-washy on it, but we wanted to hear from both sides. So whether his opinion is strong, I think it's not, but he was the one that did speak against this.
Mr. Dole, do you know why he spoke against it?
I was also at that meeting, and in essence, he tried to present the other side as balanced as he could. I think as an attorney, he could argue either, but he was trying to present some of the history of how we as a state have made that decision. So, you know, he wasn't asked to take a position, but someone needed to try to present both sides. It was actually asked by members of the commission to try to have some kind of balance in the debate.
As an attorney, he could argue either.
Yeah, if you get hired by one.
So there's no official position by the DA's office or the sheriff's department on this? There's no official position?
Vicki Burke, have you heard any official position from...
No, and I was not at the meeting where they presented the other side, so that was, I had just taken that impression from conversations I had had with him. No, there hasn't been an official position. But I didn't see a lot of strong opposition from the sheriff on this particular issue.
Good. Thank you.
Bill Fian.
Well, I was there for District Attorney Grinke's testimony, and I don't agree with the characterization that he didn't have an opinion on it. I believe that he thinks the current system is working, and he pointed out that you know, there were problems with moving 17-year-olds back into the juvenile detention system. There are children as young as 10 and 11 years old, and he pointed out that, you know, if one of the fears is, you know, what happens to a 17-year-old when they're put into a prison situation, they have the same problems when the 17-year-olds are in the juvenile justice system. So I think his position was that there were problems with either approach.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I met with the DA, the sheriff, and the judge, I prefer not to say, and they were all actually quite on the same page that it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. There's pluses, there's minuses. The bullying was certainly one aspect. The other is a 17-and-a-half-year-old who gets convicted. When he turns 18, it's gone. So in 6 months, he's just like he's never done anything. And yet on the other one, they all were pretty, though, that the money has to come in order to help do the services for the child thing. I think that was pretty unanimous among the three of them. But that's what I took away from the conversation I had with the three.
Thank you. Jill Billings?
Since we're quoting professionals who work with juveniles in this county, which I think is appropriate, I talked to Mary Ellen Princeton as I was doing lobbying in Madison, and I asked her if there were any issues that she felt strongly about that she wanted me to lobby on behalf of the Human Services Department, and this was the one that she mentioned. She said 17-year-olds do not belong in adult courts. Those 17-year-olds should be in the juvenile detention facility where we have programming that's more appropriate for them. They can still go to school. Brain development of 17-year-olds shows that they just should not, their brains have not developed to the point where they should be treated as adults. And now, if someone is accused of a crime, a 17-year-old is accused of a crime, they could be waived into, or they're in adult court. Being accused of a crime, you're in adult court, which I think is something that's very frightening, and the federal government's trying to work on at least stopping that. Most of the 90-some percent of the crimes that are committed by these 17-year-olds are not violent crimes. They just, again, I'll quote Mary Ellen Princeton, they do not belong in the adult facility. And if they do, it's up to the discretion of a judge to waive them.
Further discussion, Bridget Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I worked in the jail in La Crosse in 83 and 84, and I worked in juvenile detention for 18 years until 2008. So I saw juveniles in jail back in the day. When I worked there, there was a federal mandate to get kids out of jails because the suicide rates were so much higher than kids in juvenile detention. And so that's how we got a juvenile detention center here. That opened in 1990. Then from 1990 to 2008, I worked in that juvenile detention center, and we had no successful suicides in the juvenile detention center. There were several successful suicides in the jail. That's due to many reasons. We had a different way of relating to the kids than we had direct supervision. We had a higher staff ratio. We had 15-minute checks. We had some real good screening for the kids and their emotional state when they came in. I think, number one, this needs to be done because it's the right thing. Number two, the fears that mixing 17-year-olds with 10-year-olds, you know, all jails and juvenile detentions have classification issues. You cannot, well, you could, of course, but you are supposed to classify them by age and size, as well as victims and predators. So you wouldn't find a 10-year-old in a cell block with a 17-year-old unless there were just no other choices. So I just think this is what we need to do, whether we have the money or not, and I just urge you to vote for this amendment.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Ms. Billings.
Thank you. Finally, I have item 6-19. The Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding financial support of local public health by the state of Wisconsin. Whereas pursuant to Wisconsin Statute Section 252.03, every local health department shall immediately investigate and promptly take all measures to prevent, suppress, and control communicable diseases, and whereas currently there is no state financial support to reimburse local health departments for the cost of carrying out the state mandate for communicable disease prevention and control, and whereas La Crosse County utilizes approximately $250,000 a year of local tax levy to meet the obligation of communicable disease control that protects both local and statewide population, and whereas Wisconsin ranked second to last in the United States in 2008 for state support of local public health funding. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby encourage Governor Jim Doyle, Senator Dan Kopanky, Representatives Mike Hipsch and Jennifer Schilling, and the Wisconsin Counties Association in its legislative platform to support state of Wisconsin funding of local health departments to cover a portion of the cost of communicable disease prevention and control mandated by Wisconsin Statute S-252.03. Fiscal note, the per capita spending for public health by the state of Wisconsin in 2008 was $10.50 compared to Minnesota's per capita funding of $16.25. Minnesota's national health ranking is improving while Wisconsin's ranking is declining. I move for its approval.
Moved by Jill Billings. Is there a second? Seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Any discussion? Ralph Geary.
We generate these resolutions, but I'm looking at the fiscal condition of the state of Wisconsin. Does anyone think that they're seriously looking at this stuff? I mean, the administrator said gear up for some cuts in human services and all these different areas. In the news, we're one of the worst states in the country in our fiscal, and we raided every fund, borrowed money from every source, and we're, you know, I mean, nobody knows how we're going to unravel it, you know, the nation and the state of Wisconsin. I mean, with the fiscal mess we're in, yeah, it's great to ask for more money, but they can't even balance the current budget they have. I mean, where is it coming from would be my question.
Joe Billings.
Doug Mormon is here if anyone has questions for him also. I'd like to mention that. And, yeah, I think that point is well taken. But I think part of what we do with these resolutions is to let legislators know what our concerns are, what our priorities are. And it's rare that these things, we have solutions in a year. I think part of what this is just years of building and giving them information and telling them what our priorities are.
Well, I think another answer, too, would maybe they're not going to increase, but hopefully something like this will help keep it from getting gutted even worse. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. There's no money that we're going to be seeing.
Well, the point I was trying to make is we should pick and choose our issues. If we just keep sending them these every month, after a while, I think they're heading to a circular file. I mean, we got to focus in on certain things, like the rest of the country. Tighten your belt, get the budget balanced.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, and I think Supervisor Geary did say the right word, and that is focus. And one of the training sessions I did attend at the WALDAB meeting was on that very thing, how to effectively lobby and make progress on your priorities, and focus was the issue. And one of the things we're attempting to do here is to get all of the counties in Wisconsin asking for this very thing. So, and it doesn't always happen the first try, but getting people on board and being an advocate for it is important. So I do think that there is a time and a place for doing this, and now is a good time to start.
Further discussion, anybody? All in favor of the resolution, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. One more for you.
One more. I have item 6-20 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding child and family services review, planning, and follow-up. Whereas under the Federal Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, states were required to have a child and family services review by the federal government approximately every 5 years, and whereas the purpose of the CFSR is to monitor state compliance with 45 indicators of safety and permanency for children in the child welfare system, whereas La Crosse, Milwaukee, Sauk, and Columbia counties in April all participated in the most recent CFSR for the state of Wisconsin, and whereas there was substantial improvement within many of the CFSR indicators this time compared with the first CFSR in Wisconsin, but there were several major areas which were out of compliance, i.e., time for children to be adopted, time for reunification of children to their biological homes, timelines of initial assessments, etc. Whereas the State Department of Children and Family has to submit a program improvement plan to the Administration of Children and Families of the Federal Department of Health and Human Services by fall of 2010, whereas family and children services in Wisconsin are significantly underfunded at the state and federal levels, and further compliance with these federal standards would require additional funding and or restructuring of child welfare services in the state. Whereas with the opportunity to examine outcomes in child welfare brought on by the most recent CFSR, the state should commission a study regarding the funding and structure of child welfare services in the future of the state. Now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors ask the Wisconsin Legislature, the Department of Children and Family Services, the Wisconsin Counties Association, and the Wisconsin County Human Services Association to commission a legislative study regarding child welfare funding and structure in the state. Be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors ask that this study be part of the state's program improvement plan from the most recent CFSR, and be it further resolved that this resolution be sent to the La Crosse County Legislative Delegation, the Wisconsin Counties Association and its legislative platform, the Wisconsin County Human Services Association, and the State Department of Children and Family Services. Fiscal note, there are no fiscal obligations for the county for this resolution, and I move for its approval.
Moved by Jill Billings. Is there a second? Second by Tara Johnson. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried, one no. Mr. Feehan. Oh, abstain. Okay. That passes with one abstention. Is that it for you, Ms. Billings? Thank you very much. And that gets us to suggestion for future agenda topics or announcements. Anybody have anything along those lines? Ms. Johnson?
Skipper Liner.
Okay, Skipper Liner, we'll put on the agenda for, we'll try to get on for policy planning.
And Supervisor Geary also had a suggestion. I just want to make sure we don't lose it from the, like, hours and hours ago discussion about.
Funding non-county entities?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Thank you. Andrea Richmond?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any update on Park Plaza?
The short answer is no, but we can put that on the agenda.
We can put that on the next agenda. Sure.
Anybody else? Announcements or suggestions?
Copies of the PowerPoints, if people want them, are here. So,
those green sheets, if you were one of the people that had those, please fill those out, get those back to us, and that gets us to Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When people give you advice, you should take some time to understand what they're really trying to say. For example, the other day I went to the doctor and he advised me to get plenty of exercise and I should play 18 holes every day. I would kind of like that part about the 18 holes every day, so I went out and bought a harmonica. That and with a June.
Seconded by Brad Conkle. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Sobranek.